Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another edition of the UFANcast, now powered by BlockU.com and the SB Nation Network. I'm Steven, along with our co-host Alex and Adia, and our producer Shane, and we're coming to you, as we always do, from the Red Zone store in Sandy, Utah. Remember to get all of your Utah Utes merchandise at any of their four locations in Sandy, West Jordan, Salt Lake City, and Layton. Call the Sandy store at 801-523-9173, or go online to uredzone.com. Well, fans, this Saturday, Utah traveled down to the desert of Tempe, Arizona, and unfortunately dropped a 19-16 overtime game to the formerly number 15-ranked team in the country, Arizona State. You know, Utah held an advantage 16-13 going into the final few minutes, and Arizona State managed to tie it up and push it into overtime, where, unbelievable to most Utah fans, automatic Andy Phillips was not and missed a 35-yard field goal, which opened the door for Arizona State, who kicked its own 36-yard field goal to win the game. So, Alex, what did you see from this game? What was your major takeaway from this game?
So, to me, it seemed like Dave Christensen just doesn't really trust anybody on offense other than Devontae Booker. We kind of talked before the show, the middle of the field was open, and ASU was in cover zero for most of the game. So, you had opportunities. Tonga killed across the middle against USC the week previously, against USC. And the deep ball, I'd have to think somebody like Kalen Clay, or you just throw a jump ball to either 6'5" Tim Patrick or 6'3" Kenneth Scott. One of those guys, I mean, if you do that a couple times, it forces ASU to respect the deep ball, which I don't think they did without Drez Anderson.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, I don't know that Drez Anderson would have made much of a difference. Have you seen his stats this year?
But I mean, he was the threat.
They're down.
It's, you know, it was the 10 receptions of 40 yards or more last season that I think it's just the threat that Drez could beat you.
But the threat was not last season. The threat is this year, and this year his numbers are down, as are all the receivers.
Yeah.
Because, as we talked about off the air, they're not going downfield.
Mm-mm.
In fact, they're not really throwing the ball. I'm going to jump in here right now. My major takeaway is that, you know, regardless of scheme or going downfield or what have you, I mean, Travis Wilson, I didn't see that he did anything wrong. I mean, they list him now as the co-starter, which I think is completely unfair to Travis Wilson, because he did nothing wrong in that game. The problem is that in that game plan, Dave Christensen turned Travis Wilson into a 6'7" John Hayes. I mean, he's just managing the game. He's not, you know, being what he is, which is the strong-armed, you know,
gunslinger.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Taylor Kelly, Arizona State's quarterback, had almost as many completions as Travis Wilson had attempts. Travis Wilson has fewer attempts than any other starter in the league. I mean, it's one thing to say we need to go down the field more as Kyle Whittingham did. It's another thing to just
say we need to go.
We just need to pass the ball
exactly.
More, you know, I don't care if they're 5 yard outs or 8 yard outs or, you know, post
fades.
A slant fades, whatever. But we've got to commit to the passing game more. Period.
And just commit to more creativity in general. I mean, you know, I mean, how hard is it to, you know, figure out a defense against running the ball up the middle every single time?
Yeah. You know, an analogy I came up with today, and it's kind of scary, actually. After that Arizona State game, and I was writing up the post-game article, I started to think of what we look like, okay? You know, who do you compare this Utah team to offensively? And you know the team that keeps coming up in my head is Alabama. Utah looks like Alabama in 2008. You know who 2014 Alabama looks like? Utah 2008. I mean, what?
Yeah.
How crazy
is
that?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, as I sit back and I rethink about the game, and as I was sitting there watching it, and knowing just the history of Travis Wilson specifically, I mean, the first game he came in against UCLA, a couple hundred yards passing, but the dude was pushing it down the field. I mean,
yeah, oh yeah.
As I remember that season specifically, anytime we had John Hayes, once it got to like third and eight, it was terrifying just because you may as well just punt the ball.
Sure.
There's a couple like third and 20s, and Travis was just gunning it down the field and converting first downs. The dude could throw the ball. Obviously,
the dude can throw the ball. Yeah. Let's put it into present tense.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with Travis Wilson.
No.
He's not hurt. He's
no.
not. Bill Riley talked about it today on ESPN 700 and said that he thinks that, or actually, I think it was OC was talking about how he thinks that there's a confidence problem.
Yeah, because they don't have confidence in him.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think that he has a problem with his own confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Well, once he gets dealing, and once he starts completing balls, I don't want to say he's automatic because he's obviously not quite at that level. But the dude, he gets on fire. He gets into a rhythm. He'll start moving in the pocket and just lasering it left and right and starts moving him down the field. They're not giving an opportunity to get into that rhythm. It happened against SC.
Because they had to.
The game. Yeah.
Limited time. They had to throw the ball.
Same thing, you know, the first half against – the beginning of the second half against ASU, that offense just drove down the field. And I will give Christensen credit on one thing. They integrated a traditional speed option in terms of the old-fashioned outside and pitch or keep. I thought that was a brilliant addition.
I saw that against USC last week,
you saw him tease it, but then they really ran it, and obviously Travis just busted off like crazy. And the thing with Travis is a lot of people are like, well, he's not really a running quarterback. I beg to differ. Is he a 4-4 guy? No, but once he says, look at the run
he had before they had the touchdown.
Yeah.
Right.
Or that run he had on third down. I can't remember what it was. And he broke like three tackles to pick up eight yards. That was impressive.
He looks funny doing it, but he's an effective runner, big body, and he's very determined. Is he Kendall Thompson? No, but damn it, he's effective.
Yeah, but now, you know the thing about it is that the option is not effective if one of the options isn't in the game.
Sure.
And one of those options has to be a play-action pass.
No, yeah. I absolutely agree. The whole game, even the commentators are saying, okay, there's a play-action here somewhere.
They were talking about it all game long, and it was there.
And then they did draw one up, but then all of a sudden Travis got smacked in the mouth. They couldn't really quite get it off, and then just as I sit there watching the game, it's like, just throw the goddamn ball. Just because the opportunities were there. ASU was begging them to try to throw the ball.
Oh, they were. Yeah. They were absolutely daring us.
Right.
And
look at Booker's touchdown reception. Why don't you run four or five of those plays? You know, Booker was wide open. And if he hadn't almost dropped the ball, and, you know, if they wouldn't have been at the four-yard line, he probably would have run for 30 yards before anybody got him.
Well, and the great thing, too, is obviously, and I didn't really know this or realize this until, I want to say Oregon State or SC, I don't remember, but both Booker and whoever's in tight end, generally Tonga, when they're blocking, obviously they'll stay on block, but if there's nobody there, then they'll break off into a pattern. Booker against ASU this past week, and Travis missed him, but, you know, it happens. Booker had nobody to block, and he ran a wheel route. He was all by himself up the side of the field, and the problem is when you don't throw the ball, then Travis might not be seeing this stuff because he's not in the rhythm of throwing the ball. So at some point, it's just the comfort level, and they got to say.
Well, the other thing, the other side of the coin, when you're talking about the comfort level, and I totally agree with you, is that, like you said, he can't get into a rhythm, right? I mean, if you're going run, and it was effective. I'm not even saying there was anything wrong with that per se. It's just that when you get into third down and long, which eventually happens, he hasn't thrown a pass for, you know, for a whole series.
Yeah, it's like coming off the bench cold to shoot a
exactly.
three.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's just...
Or shoot a free throw,
it's
right?
It's just one of those things where an offensive coordinator...
Let him get into a rhythm, like you said.
Yeah, can manufacture a little bit in the passing game. You know, crossing routes, you know, run some rub routes, do some pick plays, for God's sake.
What about the play that we absolutely destroyed Georgia Tech on a few years ago with Travis Latondres? What about the skinny post, for heaven's sakes?
Right.
I mean, if they're running cover zero,
just anything
the middle
between
of the
those
field
hashes.
Is open. Yeah, the hashes are open all day.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite plays is when they They play action. They either move Booker or Poole, and they play action across the formation, and then all of a sudden Tonga just sweeps across the face of the defense, and all of a sudden he's either there on a slant, on a post, on anything just to stretch the field. And I would love to sit in a film room with this offensive staff and to say, well, what are you seeing? Why are you not giving them the opportunity to be explosive? Because we saw last year, obviously, from Travis to Drez, that there at one time we're leading the country in explosive plays in terms of like 40 or 50 yard plays.
Right, last year.
It's there. This personnel can do it. What's holding them back? And that's kind of the million-dollar question. Are they scared of the interception?
Well, again, it's got to be the scheme. And when I say scheme, not the X's and O's, but the actual plays that are called. Because I mean, we're seeing, and I hate to go back to, oh, it's the play calling, that sort of thing. I don't want to say exactly that, but it's the overall game plan. Right? Yeah. I mean, right now, it's handoff to Devontae Booker. And I hate to fall back on, you know, an old saying, but heck, it doesn't matter who you have under center.
Yep.
Any quarterback can hand it off to Devontae Booker.
Right.
Well, and right now, he's 10 yards short of 1,000 yards, which, you know, this early in the season, quote unquote, is not too bad. I mean,
well, the guy is a stud for
he's
no.
He's a stud, but
yeah.
Well, the guy is
help
a stud,
him.
Absolutely.
Exactly, but
yes,
he needs
exactly.
help.
Exactly, yeah. Help him out. Yeah. You know,
he can't be the only person on the field.
Well, how many times? I mean, the saying was, from many in the media and even, you know, the commentators, that it looked like Utah was waiting for him to break one off.
Yeah, yep. I thought I
How's
was
he supposed
for
to when they're running cover zero?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
daring us to
exactly.
throw the ball. Well, loosen it up for him, for heaven's sake.
Well, but at the same time, and I do buy this. It just depends. I think it's a situational thing, and Coach Witt brought it up today. One other good way to beat a cover zero is if a running back gets through and finds that crease, he's gone.
Yeah.
And we've seen that with Booker.
If he gets through, but they have some good safeties.
Absolutely they do. Right. And I buy that.
And
their
linebackers are solid.
I would say that that's a very good principle to apply, but you also need to just also have the other end of the equation as well, is test them through the air. And it's just, like I keep saying, what is Dave Christensen seeing? He's up in the booth. What is he seeing, and why is he scared of Travis Wilson throwing the ball? Travis had 16 interceptions last year, and you and I disagree on it all the time of whose fault it was, regardless of whose fault it was. Why is he scared, whether it's maybe the wide receiver's not catching, whether it's Travis throwing the ball to the wrong guy? What what is going on, and why will he
Travis Wilson has zero interceptions this year.
And very rarely. There's been a few times I'm like, ooh, well, Travis, that was a bad ball.
But, he's thrown a couple that were close.
But it's
But the point is, he can't even throw a reception, let alone an interception, if he doesn't throw the ball.
Well, and I hate this with referring to the team down south, but, you know, they were really good at this in the early 90s and stuff like that. The quarterback they had, the Heisman Trophy winner, Detmer, he would throw four interceptions a game, but he had seven touchdowns. At what point do you say you take that risk, because the reward is greater than the risk?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, no good quarterback goes without interceptions. Yep. I mean, the best. Look at Tom Brady. Look at
Brett Favre. He had the most career passing touchdowns. I think Manning's broke it now, and he had the most career interceptions.
Okay. Yeah,
and Favre won.
Well, look at Manning. Manning's thrown a bunch of interceptions too, right?
Yeah, he threw three this
If you're
going to
throw the ball, one's going to get away from you.
Right.
You're going to get hit. It's going to float. You're going to.
It's
going to
get tipped.
It's going to get tipped, exactly. I mean, things are going to happen. And Shane, you and I disagree on some of those. Some of the tip balls, they were definitely not his fault, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think there is, to your point, I think there is an acceptable touchdown to interception ratio. Okay, it wasn't 16-16. 1-1 is not an acceptable one.
Nope.
But
by the numbers, absolutely not.
But how many touchdowns do you have this season? Like
eight or nine.
Now. Okay, 9-0 is not necessarily an acceptable touchdown to interception ratio.
It is through four games.
I suppose you're right. Six.
Well, I mean, for any other quarterback through four games, you know, that kind of ratio is good. But through eight games, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, through eight games, and we're talking about one touchdown a game. And that includes...
That game against with Booker in that
same
game.
I'm saying is that includes games against, like, Idaho State.
Sure.
So in Pac-12 plays, he's probably averaging maybe a half a touchdown a game.
Yeah,
that's
no, yeah.
unacceptable
yeah.
in
it's
the Pac-12.
It's been horrible once they started Pac-12 play.
That's unacceptable in the Pac-12.
I mean, yeah. The last time they were really putting up decent numbers was Fresno State.
But again, we need a quarterback
who can throw
touchdowns.
They've shown flashes. That's the frustrating thing is they've shown flashes since Fresno State.
The frustrating thing is there's nothing wrong with Travis Wilson.
Yeah.
Right. And who would have thought that this time, by this time of year, if when we were talking, you know, before the season started, who would have thought that this time of year, if we had a healthy quarterback, that this would be happening? If a healthy Travis Wilson and we're not passing at all, none of us would ever have guessed that.
On the other hand, It was also made a point today, and I think it does bear repeating that Utah's 6-2.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, keep it in perspective, right?
No, which after eight games would if we had all talked about it at the beginning of the season, because none of us, I don't think any of us figured 6-2 at this point.
No.
I don't think any of us did.
No, I had to go back. I might
I
be
think
close,
one of
but
us
you're
said,
right.
I think when you weren't here, Steve, one of us said 5-1.
I know I had.
But that was as far as anyone would go.
Yeah,
was a 5-1 start.
But that's after six games. After eight games, I don't think any of us had him.
Exactly.
No, I don't think anybody would have had him at 6-1.
Especially going down into Tempe, and really having the game.
Right there.
Won, you know.
Well,
I mean,
they pushed him
to
the brink. That's for
well,
sure.
They had the game won.
Yeah, yeah. Two losses that could have gone either way, really.
Well, that game against ASU down there, and I'm like, this game is one play away from Utah just grasping and kind of taking over that game, yeah. And that play never came. Obviously, we've discussed mm-hmm. probably why, but as I was sitting there watching, and I was kind of thinking this in my head, like, man, Utah is a play away from really. With the defense playing the way they were, dominating this game.
Well, they're an effective passing game away from 8-0.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Think about that.
And you and I have talked. I don't think they're using Kenneth Scott right.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Kenneth
not.
Scott is
or Tim Patrick.
You look at their.
I think Andre Lewis is underused.
They're not using.
Andre Lewis was the last.
At
guy,
least five players right.
Practice.
Yeah, they're not using the quarterback right, the receiving core right, the tight ends right. They're using the offensive line. Granted, this is probably a better run-blocking offensive line than a pass-blocking offensive line. I think that showed against USC when they went max protect. But really the only player they're using right, and that's debatable just because of the disparity in terms of the play calling, is Devontae Booker, just because the kid's, I dare say, borderline All-American running back. Yep. So it's... That's the only one they're quote unquote probably using right.
You know, if this team is 8-0, I would say he's got to, especially with Todd Gurley out. Mm-hmm. I would say he's definitely in line for an All American spot. All right, we're gonna go around the table. Everybody, give us your game ball, and based on this game, what is the one improvement Utah has to make against Oregon this week? Shane, who gets your game ball, and what is the improvement you'd like to see against Oregon?
Game ball, I'll go with Dominic Hatfield. He's, 6 foot, and he was going up against a 6'3", 6'4" NFL wide receiver and just was in his jersey. I mean,
good,
the one catch that
pick.
He did make, Hatfield was in his jersey,
yeah.
And it was just a great catch and a great throw. And I'll throw Davion Orphy as an honorable mention. He got destroyed early in the season, and he's coming around. He's playing good ball, especially in lieu of Eric Rowe not being available last week. Going against Oregon. The Oregon thing is so interesting because, A, they're not Oregon anymore.
You know what? I'm not afraid of Oregon either. I'm not. This week, I think Utah has just as good a chance to beat Oregon as they did Arizona State.
I'm scared of number 8. Don't get me wrong. Marcus Mariota is an absolute stud. But they're sloppier.
Mm-hmm.
They don't protect the ball as much. Their defense is very questionable.
Their offensive line is still suspect.
Yeah, so opportunities are going to be there to beat Oregon.
Sure.
The key is Oregon's going to score 35-ish, 40-ish points.
Can we keep up?
Exactly. The same argument we had last year. Can Utah counterpunch? Can Utah right. put them on their heels? Mm-hmm. And I think they can.
I think they can. Will they?
Exactly. And that's the maddening thing is they have to be aggressive.
Offensively
yes,
aggressive.
Yes. They will be aggressive defensively.
We know they will.
They're going to try to knock Mariota out of the game. They have to be aggressive defensively. They yes. have to take – you know, Booker will get yards because they are susceptible to giving up running yards. They just are. And Ifo Ekpre-Olamu is a very good corner. Go to the other side of the field then and attack the other corner. The plays are going to be there to be made. They need to make the plays. And that's it's straightforward. The plays are there to be made. Make them.
All right, Alex, who gets your game ball and what improvement do you want to see?
Game ball, that's tough. I think there's a few people that could get the nod. I'm going to go with Nate Orchard. He had a couple key sacks. There was one time I think ASU was borderline in field goal range, and it was a third and, I don't know, six or eight, and Orchard got a sack. So I'm going to go with Orchard because I think he made key plays. But, you know, players like Marcus Williams, I mean, compare how he played against ASU to the Washington State game. I mean, he's improved a lot. Dominique Hatfield.
For a true freshman, not bad at all.
Exactly. Or Hatfield.
You know, the
true sophomore.
And basically
the
a true freshman
in the
corner.
Secondary. Yeah, the freshmen in the secondary have been playing really well. And when we looked at this team just a few games ago, and we looked and said to ourselves, oh, my Lord, if Tevin Carter goes down, if Brian Blecken goes down, we've got nobody behind him except true freshmen, you know, we're gonna get lit up. And we have had that situation, and they've stepped up. So this secondary could be really good for years to come.
Well, and absolutely. Going preseason, you know, you're looking at depth chart, okay, Orfe, senior, Rose, senior, Carter, senior.
Black and senior.
Yeah. You just go like, oh my God. Like,
the whole.
It's gone.
The whole,
but,
right.
But
right.
now you look, you're like.
Like, oh, okay,
well,
we're fine.
All right, well, let's just reload. Yeah. It looks like that's what's going
to
happen.
Because you've got Reggie Porter,
Ahmad Porter will come back, exactly.
Dominique Hatfield.
Marcus
Williams.
Williams comes back. And
Andre Godfrey.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's not as scary as it looked.
And then, as you know, you always bring up the kid from South Carolina coming in, too.
Yeah, Ahmad Christian.
Ahmad Christian, right.
Well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Tevin Carter, potentially, there's talk that he may apply for a medical hardship, mm-hmm. so he could be back next year, maybe.
All right, Dia, who you got?
Oh, improvement. I didn't do an improvement.
Oh, what's your improvement?
Passing game. They've got... Wilson has to throw for 250 yards and I think three touchdowns against Oregon.
But what? Oh, so you just want to see? Okay, so I'm not predicting wins or losses here, but in order to really play and, as you said, Shane, keep up with the team, yeah, the passing game's got to improve.
Yeah.
Definitely. Adia.
Well, there went Shane again, stealing my thunder. Because I had picked Dominique Hatfield as well. And, I mean, I just feel like he was clearly the obvious choice. I mean, you could say the whole Utah defense could get the game ball. But I really think he stands out. And for all the reasons that Shane said. I mean, he's a little guy going up against a big guy. He made a possible Biletnikoff Award winner. He contained him and gave him – basically, he just had a day. It was just a day for Jalen Strong, and Jalen Strong doesn't have a whole lot of just a day. He usually has huge games, and he looked like nothing special on Saturday. You could say, oh, well, you know, he didn't get that interception. But if that's your biggest knock is that you didn't get an interception, and you're filling in for two really amazing starters, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty freaking good day.
Don't forget Justin Thomas, true sophomore, sorry.
Yeah. Thomas is good, too.
Okay, so, Adia, what improvement do you want to see?
Just to kind of... I guess dovetail on what everybody else has said. I mean, we just have to get more creative on offense. We know that Oregon has a susceptible defense. Here is the perfect opportunity because right now, if we go in doing what we did the last game, you know, I mean, that's something that a not so good defense can defend against. So, and we know that they're going to score. We know that they're going to score. So we have to get creative because Oregon is like, oh, well, they're well. I think we got this. Well, there should be no problem. Who cares that our defense isn't so good?
And listening to some of the comments at the press conference today, specifically from Kalen Clay, is I hope the whole offense is thinking this exact same way, because he even said Oregon's going to score 35 points.
Oh, absolutely. He's like,
he said no matter how good our defense is, they're going to score. We need to score. He said this game is on us.
It is on the offense.
He said
absolutely.
This game is on the offense.
If there was one game to get together, this is it.
Yeah, and
they could drop off the rest of the year, but
again,
they got to show up on Saturday.
In my opinion,
and the play calling has to be there.
Yeah, in my opinion,
it's on the guy in the booth.
This game is on Dave Christensen.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is where he has to earn his.
Where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, this is his paycheck this year, because this is the one that he has to keep up with. I don't think we have to. You know my feeling about getting outside of the game plan, you know, because Whittingham did that once against Arizona on the assumption from the opening kickoff that he had to keep up, and he put himself in a hole by making some decisions based on that philosophy. I don't think they have to get outside of the game plan, but the game plan has to be to score touchdowns, not field goals this time around.
Yeah, and this is the kind of game to where this is the reason you went and got a Kalen Clay
for one season.
Right.
This is why you went and got a kid like that, is to say, you're fast, they're fast, let's see who's faster.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, and in some ways in that last game, maybe, I mean, course, I didn't want to see a loss, but maybe the missed field goal at the end was a good wake-up call. Like, this can't be what we're playing towards. Because as we discussed before the show, at the end of the game, they were clearly just playing to get to overtime so Andy Phillip could kick. I mean, no one was even trying to do anything.
No, they
it was
ran,
just like, okay,
the,
can we get the clock done?
They ran the last two plays into the line.
See,
just to set up Phillips.
Exactly.
See, losses.
So hopefully, hopefully that's like, okay, let's never put ourselves in this situation again.
See, losses suck inherently, but I think there's a lot of things that can be learned in the two losses you just had this year, and that's pretty cool to say after eight games still, by the way.
Yeah.
The Washington State, I think, was the kind of loss where it's like, okay, you guys can't dick around. You guys have to go the full 60, and obviously you see what happened. I think the players learned that. I think this last loss.
But that
is
was also an offensive failure.
Sure.
But that was a play, not a coaching failure. More.
Well, there were more plays there to be made, i.e., the Drez drop for a touchdown. There were opportunities there.
Right. Yeah, they were trying.
Yeah, against ASU, I think the opposite is true this time, to where the coaching staff's like, okay, we need to let these guys play. We can't hold them back. So hopefully they went back and watched that film and saw, you know, we can't just, you know, be so close to the vest. We have to let Travis Wilson, our Elite 11 quarterback, or who knows if Kendall Thompson comes out against Oregon, either one of them, we have to let them go out to try to win and play the game and play the position. So hopefully this loss was a good loss for the coaching staff to say, all right, we got to go. There's just no other way around it. They got to go, especially
against Oregon,
right. Which fortunately ASU is very similar to Oregon in a lot of ways. So
did anybody
nice
watch
primer.
Oregon's last game
against Stanford? Yeah, they destroyed them.
But did you watch the game?
Stanford left a lot of points on the field.
Not just that, but Oregon went fast.
Yeah.
Fast, and I thought Arizona State hurried to the line. But not anywhere near the tempo of Oregon.
That's the problem with Oregon.
And there were a couple of plays against Arizona State where our guys weren't ready on defense. Now this is not a slam on the defense, except that this is a different team, and the tempo is totally different, and we have to be ready on both sides of the ball for that, right? So my game ball goes out to sophomore defensive end stud Hunter Dimmick, who had 7 tackles and 2 sacks and was just a disruptive beast in that game. The one thing I want to see is the passing game open up the running game as opposed to the other way around. And actually, more of us just kind of playing the power running game, you know? I mean, Coach Winningham himself said before the Arizona State game that we started out as a up-tempo team, and now we're down to a slow, grind-it-out team. Okay, we can't grind it out against Oregon, or we're going to see what the Alabama Sugar Bowl game looked like from the Alabama perspective. And we honestly, we can't afford that. So, all right, folks, we're going to wrap this up here at the Red Zone for the UFANcast and BlockU.com. As always, a big thank you to all of our fans and listeners. Remember to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, check out our YouTube and Ustream channels, and visit BlockU.com. You can also subscribe to and download the show from iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Join us next time when we bring you more of the best of Utah sports.